Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable!
Mayweather makes a pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's fact, I'm the best, you know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
And we're back for a bonus edition of the Last Round Podcast here in San Diego, California, immediately following the kickoff press conference for Canelo Alvarez and Dimitri Bivol. Our guest here immediately after the press conference from the three knockdown rule, Constantino, and your co-host Steve Kim. Thank you again for joining us, guys.
Orale.
Hey, what up, what up?
Constantino's the tech. You're the tech behind the show, right?
I'm just the editor. These guys are the talent right here.
Yeah, talent. We just talk. He does all the hard work. Don't tell anybody, though.
So, you know, immediate reaction. What did you guys think? It was pretty standard press conference, but what did you think, Steve? We'll start with you, Steve.
Well, San Diego stayed classy. And so, look, I love the fact the two-hour drive wasn't great, but if it kept one-third of the media from coming, it was well worth it because I think this was well run. I think there's a lot of cordial feelings between Bivol and Canelo, obviously a lot of respect, and you know, Eddie Hearn knows how to put on a performance. He is a content monster. I'm not gonna lie to you, if you tag Eddie Hearn in a tweet, you are bound to get like 10 times more retweets. So it's always good to see him a little bit, but it's gonna be a big event, and I know Kino's very happy now. He doesn't have to go to Dubai.
Thank God.
Very worried about that.
Thank God.
But you were ready to go to Dubai if it was
in
Dubai.
I was ready to go, but I already have my flight booked to Vegas as well as my hotel.
You know, I mean, was it realistic, Steve, that it would have been in Dubai?
The money talks, though. Remember, when you're putting up $45, $50 million, every dollar counts. Eddie's done it before with Anthony Joshua in that rematch against Andy Ruiz. So it's based on the track record. Look, a lot of people have thrown out Dubai as some sort of, like, threat. And it's always like this negotiating chip. Eddie's actually done it not too long ago. I believe that was December of 2019. But, look, in my view, and I know this for a fact, talking to certain people that work in that industry, Las Vegas, and specifically the casinos, on Cinco de Mayo weekend, they want boxing and they want Canelo. So I think this is where it was always destined to belong.
So what do you think about Dimitri Bivol as the opponent? You know, obviously, every opponent that Canelo gets, being the star of the sport, gets criticism from one side or the other. What's your take on Bivol as the opponent?
Anyone that has a problem with Bivol as an opponent is either dishonest, doesn't know boxing, or has an agenda, or all three. Look, the guy is probably the second best light heavyweight in the world. A couple weeks ago, we had Tim Bradley on, who I believe has a great opinion, great eye. He said from the beginning, he actually thinks Bivol, based on style and talent, is the best light heavyweight in the world. Now, based on style, foot speed, distance, spacing, educated left hand, it's a very tough fight. And, you know, me and Tino actually had a discussion with Alik, one of the co-managers with Vadim Kornilov, of Bivol, and he told me when they actually started to negotiate this, or when it was started to be talked about, Alik didn't believe it. He actually said, let's get ready for another fight. He's actually surprised that Canelo took this fight. I give Canelo a lot of credit. If he overcomes this challenge May 7th, in my view, it's one of the best victories in his career.
Canelo unified the titles in less than 1 year. Four out of his last five opponents are undefeated world champions. I mean, you can't talk shit about that. If it's so easy, why don't you guys do it?
Right, right. And, you know, I feel like that's a pretty fair statement to say.
Factual statement.
Yeah, it's a factual statement.
I mean, that's an empirical fact. You know, at the media roundtable before this began, Canelo made it very clear, guys, you guys need to start doing something on your own. Mm-hmm. Here's the reality of the situation. From Golovkin on, where Canelo's gone on this really good run, outside of Gennady Golovkin, who was a draw, none of these guys brought anything to the table in terms of their own profile or brand. They're just kind of lucky to land the lottery because they either have a belt or they have a certain amount of cachet. Like Caleb Plant in any other market is not worth $10 million. But when you have that last belt that he wants, you're worth $10 million. This is where I'm wondering, David Benavidez is a guy that I really like. He's a good fighter, very accomplished. He'd make for a good fight against anybody. He has a WBC belt. He's making a lot of money against Canelo. Mm-hmm. He's lost that belt, guys, without ever losing a fight. That has to be some sort of historic achievement.
So do we see guys like Benavidez, Charlo, do they fight each other? Tino, let's start with you.
Make some fucking noise. make the fans demand the fight. How? By beating world champions, by beating tough fights, by being in tough fights. I mean, make some noise, dude. Mm-hmm. You can't just be fighting just random fighters or last-minute replacements.
Well, Tino, you're known to be in Canelo's camp, like in the actual camp, you know, the last several camps and stuff, you know. You're good friends with the Canelo camp, which is awesome. So you being there when nobody else is there, when there's no media, it's just Canelo, Eddie, and some other fighters, you know, training. What's his take? Because obviously he said, I think he told Ellie recently that, you know, he's like, they need to fight each other. He's like, I'm busy this year. You know, is that the impression you got, you know, being around him?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you take it from the horse's mouth. Canelo even said now he fancies the idea of cleaning up 175 and unifying all the titles. I mean, he's making history as we speak. You just have to pay attention and look at the resume. The resume speaks for itself. Like I said, who else is doing this? Who? Steve?
No one's even being as active. So when you take a look at quantity versus quality, look, Canelo will always be judged more harshly. But Canelo also told us earlier at that roundtable, guys, I can only fight a certain amount of times a year, or I can only fight once a night. The St.
Right.
George Foreman against five guys in Toronto.
Right.
Two hands, man.
And look, the other thing that gets me is I remember doing a story when I was at the Four Letter Network still, talking to Caleb Plant's representatives and David Benavidez when they were both undefeated at 168. They each had belts. And Samson Lukowicz and Tom Brown were talking about, we got to build this fight. It's too early. Wait, excuse me, guys. What? Build what? This pay-per-view into a something that's going to do 75,000 buys instead of 40,000?
Right.
What are you really building here? There comes a point in time where you're going to have to make fights. Larry Merchant once said it to me years ago. Fights make fights. In other words, if a fighter keeps going into enough good, solid battles and builds up enough of a resume, Winky Wright being an example, they may not always be the most popular or exciting, but through the body of work, Winky Wright ended up making some really good money, and he was involved in major fights. These guys now fight once or twice a year, and they wonder why they're being left out.
Right.
No one tells them the truth.
So who stands tall? Let's just say they adhere to Canelo's, I guess, recommendation. You guys have to fight each other, and then the winner fights me. Who stands tall at the end of that line?
Benavidez versus Charlo. Why don't you guys tango, and then, you know, the winner obviously is going to make some noise depending on how he wins.
Hold on. Is Benavidez, isn't he younger than 25? And what's his vaccination status? Wasn't that? I mean, look, Charles said it. I'm not fighting anyone that ain't vaxxed. That was a new one.
Oh, you're right. He did say that.
That
I forgot.
Was a new
yeah.
one. Okay.
He did say that. But who stands tall at the end? Who does Canelo fight if they all fight each other?
You mean who wins if they?
Let's say they all fought. Okay. You know
yes.
what? Benavidez. If Benavidez wins a couple of meaningful fights at 68 to 75. That makes the most business sense because he is a fellow Mexican. He's got an exciting style, and he's fiery. I guess he's going to be fighting David Lemieux in some sort of WBC-mandated fight. But here's the problem. He's not a ticket seller even in Phoenix. My understanding is they gave away tickets. I actually have proof of the notice, like the veterans committee that they have up there. They always get a certain amount of tickets. Charlo. Here's the problem I have with Jermall Charlo, who I actually like. I actually like both brothers.
I like Charlo.
You know, last year Jermall only fought one time.
Yeah.
And he actually struggled against a guy down the stretch in Juan Macias Montiel that got knocked out in three rounds by a prospect Munguia.
That's true.
That's not a guy that stands up to me and I say, hey, that guy, I want to fight Canelo. Mm-hmm. Now, let's be fair with Gennady Golovkin. We have not seen him in a while, over a year. I talked to Jonathan Banks a couple of days ago. Jonathan says, Steve, there won't be ring rust. There'll be some, but we're going to get a good version of Golovkin. I want to see what he looks like against Morata before I get overly excited about what happens
right.
in September.
That's what we were talking about in the last couple episodes. You know, he's obviously older.
He's going to be 40 on April 8th. Keep
correct.
That in mind.
Yeah, so the Morata fight is really going to tell us a lot.
Yeah. 5 years ago, that Morata fight's a three-round blowout. Mm. Now, I'm not exactly sure exactly what we have in that fight.
In terms of this fight against Bivol, Steve, and Constantino, should we call you Tino? Everybody calls you Tino.
Yeah.
Call you Tino. I don't know why I keep saying all the syllables. But do you think Bivol is in a similar situation? Obviously not now landing the Canelo sweepstakes, but do you think at one point he was in a similar situation as Gennady Golovkin was, you know, 5-6 years ago, where nobody wanted to fight him, so he just had to find somebody to be across from him? Do you think Bivol was similar in that situation before landing this Canelo fight?
I think so, but guess what? Now he has the opportunity. So everything he's been wanting, he has it. He's young. He's undefeated. He has a world title. So seize the moment. Seize the moment and take what you think is rightfully yours.
I think it's somewhat similar, but here's the difference. Gennady in 2017 was probably no worse than the second best fighter in the world, pound for pound, not just the light, the middleweight division. Also, Golovkin was rolling through people. Look, I was a big fan of Bivol. I still am. I think he's a lovely guy, very skilled technician. But can we be honest, guys? His last two, three fights, have we been overwhelmed with his performances against Craig Richards and the like? No, he hasn't set the stage. I think he's actually hit a bit of a wall in his development. I've said this on the three knockdown rule. He's a great fencer, in and out with that educated left. He knows how to fence. I wish they would teach him how to knife fight a little bit, but he has a trainer that he still have, Gennady Mashinov, who's very much like that old school, kind of that Eastern Bloc amateur trainer. They believe in that boxing. The question then becomes, let's say Bivol's actually very effective against that with Canelo, who has relatively slow feet. Can he peck and paw his way to a decision in Vegas?
It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
I'm going to love that Canelo fight, because with Canelo, if you get too far, he's sniping. And if you get too close, he's knifing.
So right.
Let's see it.
Right. So he's going to have to balance. There's going to be times when Bivol is going to have to punch and be the physical force in there. But sometimes less is going to be more, because if it gets down to protracted exchanges where the crowd gets excited, that favors Canelo over the course of time, because Canelo has turned into a master counterpuncher.
Right. Well, Mike, we were talking about earlier on the way down here to San Diego, we were talking about Bivol's last performance against Craig Richards, right, Mike? And you were saying, I mean, it wasn't that impressive.
No, it wasn't that impressive. It's one of those things. Was it Craig Richards isn't a name? So was it just Bivol just couldn't get himself up for that day? But we were also saying is Castillo was a fellow opponent for Callum Smith.
Who got blown out.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know if Lennon's actually woken up from that right hand yet. And that's the thing that gets me about boxing. It is a beauty contest. One thing Golovkin was doing when he was facing lesser opponents, when everyone was avoiding, he was blowing guys out. Style points matter.
Right.
I mean, in the National Football League, if you win every game by a field goal, you're 16-0, you're going to make the playoffs, and you have a chance. In boxing, how you win matters. I cannot stress that enough. Not all victories are created equally in this industry.
In terms of because obviously the situation in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia right now, these sanctioning bodies have come out and essentially, stated that they're not going to sanction any fighters from Russia, any fights in Russia. But the WBA has not joined that group. Is it because they're attached to this fight?
Well, they are a business, and I don't agree. Look, the individual fighter should not be penalized in this situation. And a guy like Bivol's never been political. He is the very definition of apolitical. Even a guy like Beterbiev, all of his fights, from what I know, have been in Montreal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of these guys are Russian in name, but many of them have American citizenships. They live out here. We see them at the local gyms. I don't get that, to be honest. Look, I do understand why you wouldn't want to sanction fights in that part of the world, maybe not being in business with their federations or their promoters, but to actually penalize individual fighters in this nature, I think, to me, it's very illogical.
I agree.
Right. Right. You agree, Tino?
Yeah, 100%. Why should they be penalized? They're not doing it. They're just boxers.
Right. Right.
It's funny because they kept trying to ask Bivol in the brown table about
noticed,
it. And he's like, hey, guys,
get
I'm a boxer.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't here as a political science major.
Right.
I came here as a prize fighter.
Right.
I would have said, guys, no more Bivol.
Yeah.
He cares. I don't think he wants to particularly give out his opinion. He may not have one.
Right. No, there was at one point when we were back there, somebody had asked him, and he already had gotten repeated questions about it. And Anthony Lever of Matchroom Boxing jumped in, and he's like, hey, guys, he's already answered these.
Yeah.
So he kind of put an end to it.
Yeah, this ain't the UN. We're Matchroom, okay?
Hey,
we're not the Pentagon.
And like he doesn't speak great English.
Like Steve says all the time, it's boxing. It's not that serious.
Yeah.
It's a sport. Come on. Let's keep it a sport.
Right, right. So on fight night, May 7th in Las Vegas between Canelo and Bivol, how does it end?
I think Bivol's live. I think this is the toughest fight Canelo will have had since the Golovkin fights. In a different way, though, not from the physical pressure, but tactically, and the fact that Bivol One thing about Bivol, he is who he is. So that's kind of good and bad. But he understands his identity. He's going to stick with it. He's not going to try to do something that he's not. And in my view, and this is just an assumption, I could be completely wrong, I got the sense the last couple of Canelo opponents were there just happy to be there. The victory was getting the fight. Bivol, I think, understands if I want to be somebody, I got to win the fight. So in other words, in the ninth round, Bivol's not going to say to Canelo, hey, this is a good fight, huh? I'm pretty good. I hope none of that happens. If that actually happens, I will be very disappointed in Dmitry Bivol.
Styles make fights. I'm going to pick Canelo by decision. Close fight.
Really?
But tough fight, entertaining fight.
How would you compare Bivol to Canelo's past few opponents, like a Callum Smith, you know,
Billy Joe Saunders, Caleb Plant?
I think he's better. He has that freaking jab. He has the length. He's young.
Fresher.
Like, I think it's going to be a tough fight.
What about this? Sergey Kovalev, who was very faded when they fought him, may have been up after 9-10 rounds.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. And Bivol has a great jab.
Yeah, and Bivol has a very clean lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, take that for what you will.
Yeah. No and vodka
he's got,
over
and
there.
He's got a, look, Bivol's punching power is not bad. It's just that I think after the Joe Smith fight where he got buzzed in the 10th, became a little bit more cautious, changed him a little bit psychologically, wasn't quite as brave, and I've seen this with a lot of fighters. Greatest example being Edwin Rosario, Hector Macho Camacho, and that's why I call it getting Rosario'd. That first time you get hit in the ring, you see your own mortality.
Right.
It changes you mentally. I saw that with Chad Dawson when he got drilled by Glenn Johnson in the first fight. He was never the same guy. Anthony Joshua against Klitschko.
Right.
Even though he won a great fight, he was never the same guy. With that said, Bivol has a lot of confidence. If you actually look at some of his early light heavyweight fights on HBO when he first, he was nailing guys. He can punch. The question is he a complete fighter? That's the thing. I think his development has stalled a little bit.
A big factor, I think, is going to be the crowd because he's not used to that.
Right.
And I think a lot of fighters, when they come out, they're like, holy shit, what the fuck is this? I think I saw it when Canelo fought Golovkin the first time.
First three rounds, Golovkin looked around like, wow, this is pretty big. This is kind of a little bit different. And that's a guy that sold out arenas. He had been on pay-per-views. He had been at the Forum. He had been at O2 Arena. Canelo's gotten to that point. There's now a mystique in fighting him. His events are not just boxing cards. They are international events that are on the stage. And I know this. Talk to fighters. The first time you're in a big pay-per-view, that week of the fight, we have to do the grand entrance. You have to sign 1,000 gloves for the sponsors. You have to do the satellite tour.
Right.
As you're trying to make weight, it's different, guys.
Right.
It is different. Talk to anyone that's ever been through that process.
What's your guys' take on the whole DAZN pay-per-view model now? Like, you know, after having this campaign.
I'm just wondering, is Steven Espinoza going to buy the fight? I just wonder. But I look, here's what I think. Do they have egg on their face? Yes. Do they look like hypocrites? Yes. And I have a theory, and I was on another show, BDA Boxing, and I said, look, if I was a promoter network, if I got into boxing, my company or my tagline would be called Low Expectations.
Right.
Because I would set very low expectations, and I would say, listen, I have no idea what you're getting with us. We may have good fights. We may not.
Yeah.
We may do pay-per-view, or we may not. I'm going to try to make the best fights possible, or maybe not.
Right.
But when you start acting like you're going to change the business, and everyone did it. Look, remember Free Boxing for All with PBC?
Correct, yeah.
Remember the first couple fights on ESPN Plus where my man, I love Joe Tessitore, but he said, we are, pay-per-view is dead. Well, it ain't so dead. And my latest snack column, I use that Superman meme where everyone's pointing at each other. That's what they all are.
Yeah.
I mean, hilarious. Look,
Showtime is doing a lot of pay-per-views this year, and God bless them. But does DAZN look bad? Yes, and another thing that's angering the boxing fans, and I kind of see it, I guess their monthly subscription now, if you don't go yearly.
It's going up.
$19.99.
Inflation's hitting everything there, boys. Oh,
right.
God.
It is, yeah. I think it's going, if you do the annual option, it goes from $100 to $150, I believe.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah. Oof. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Okay, with that said, and I like DAZN people. I actually like the service. They better not have these 8-week gaps where there's no boxing. That's just my view of it, because they actually went through a couple of months without having boxing last year, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
And there's not enough shoulder programming. If there's no boxing live, you don't watch DAZN. There's nothing else to really watch.
Yeah, no offense to anyone like there, darts, yeah. But I do my own shoulder programming. It's called Three Knockdown Rule. You guys do your own. We have jobs, too, guys.
And also, like, no disrespect, I'm not a fan of the darts. Yeah. I'll pass on that.
Right.
Are you a fan of the darts?
No, I'm not British.
Mike likes the darts.
Yeah. Well, he's British.
He's British. That's why. That's why.
But look, when the pound-for-pound king is fighting an undefeated world champion, I mean, come on. You got to watch.
Right.
He's not fighting Avni Yildirim. This is a pay-per-view fight.
Yeah, I also think, just a small critique, and they don't care what I think. I would have gone with more of a 50% discount for the annual subscribers. Mm-hmm. 20%, whatever. You go 50, now you're thinking something. Mm-hmm. But that is the problem when you make these bold proclamations how we're going to change the business. I've said for many years, the business of boxing, when you get into it, it will change you more than you ever change it.
Right.
And the faster you realize that, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Tino, like Danny said, you're in camp with Canelo quite a lot. What is he like behind the scenes, away from the cameras?
Like I tell everybody, he's just like you and me. He puts his jeans just like you and me, one leg at a time. He's a normal guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he cracks jokes. He's cool as fuck. He's humble. Yeah, he's a normal person, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's hard to have a conversation with him when you know who he is, you know? Yeah. So it's a little intimidating.
Right.
But he seemed very relaxed today. I got to tell you, that's a guy that's very comfortable with where he is in life.
Right.
When he dealt with us at the round table.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I respect, I've never been in camp with him. I've never been to Eddie Reynoso's gym. But the fact that I'll see him fight in, let's say, May 7th, that he'll be back in the gym without even a fight being signed by mid-July or even early June says a lot. And there's been other guys, we don't have to say their names, they trained with Eddie Reynoso in name only.
Right.
They're not there anymore for a reason. To me, when you say, what is Canelo's best skill? It's work ethic. Work ethic is a skill, just as much as having a left hook, having a good chin, having a devastating right hand. Work ethic is like Bernard Hopkins, most disciplined human being I've ever been around. He crafted himself into a fighter. To see Canelo, I remember the first time I saw Canelo live, it was against Carlos Baldomir back in 2010 at the Staples Center. It was one of those pay-per-view shows at Golden Boy. I thought he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was okay. And then I remember him nearly getting knocked silly by Miguel Cotto's brother, Jose. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe he's not okay. Look where he's come. It's hard work.
I will say this. Like, he's a really chill, humble guy. But when it's time to work, he doesn't fuck around. Like, he takes that shit really seriously. You see it in his eyes. You see it in his body language. Like, you could just tell he's in the zone when he's in the gym.
Is there, you know, there's obviously a couple fighters in his gym. One recently just left. But if there's anybody behind Canelo in work ethic within that gym, who is it?
I would say Oscar Valdez.
He's right behind.
Yes. Yeah. No doubt about it.
He's not smiling. He's not checking his phone. He's there, tunnel vision, working his ass off, day in, day out.
Oscar Valdez is the only trainer. This is when they went to Mexico for a couple of months when he was still with Manny Robles, a lot of other fighters.
Right.
Like Jesse Magdaleno chafed at it. I remember Oscar telling me, he goes, man, that was fun. I actually like going to camp. Meanwhile, every other fighter in the Manny Robles stable was just miserable for like those 6 weeks. But
yeah.
I would agree. Oscar really has a love of the game that is palpable.
You have to love the grind. I mean, how else are you going to stay here in this game for like 20 years consistently? You tell me.
Right. And then, you know, as we finish up here, obviously this Saturday on DAZN, another matchroom card, Chocolatito Gonzalez and Julio Cesar Martinez. Tino, what's your take on that fight?
I think it's a tough fight. I think if Ray Martinez can drown and push off the cliff Chocolatito Gonzalez, who's already, you know, at the last stage of his career, he can pull off an upset. And I do say it can be an upset if he does it.
Upset alert from Tino.
Tell us, Steve.
I don't disagree because Bredman Edwards has a great theory. He says when fighters move up in weight, and if they're good enough, and he said this with Brooke Golovkin, the smaller fighter may be smaller, but they're also quicker. Chocolatito's a veteran. He's been a hard charging, well-conditioned soldier.
There's a lot of wear and tear.
One thing I like about Martinez, he sets a quick tempo. There's no feel-out rounds with him. He's coming right out of the blocks as quickly as possible. The speed, the hand speed, the quickness, and the pace. Roman Gonzalez is going to have to get used to it. But my belief is It's going to be an unbelievable 5, 6, 7 rounds.
Right.
But eventually, the veteran savvy and the accuracy of Chocolatito will begin to really zero in. And Martinez is going to be game. He's going to be exciting. I think eventually he gets stopped. But, you know, look, for me, it's one last chance to see Roman Gonzalez. We don't know how many more times he's going to go out there,
right,
realistically. So it's going to be a great honor for, I think, all of us to be able to witness this at least one more time.
I will say this. However it ends, however it lasts, I think it's going to be front runner for fight of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
But, you know, you think Martinez is going to take it. How does he take it?
I think he's going to take it. I think he's going to just fucking bite down his mouthpiece, come forward, and throw punches and bunches.
Does it end like the star ring fight, like the ring side fight?
It's not going the full 12. It's going to end by knockout.
Wow!
See, that's a statement.
Tino is
that's
a statement.
I'm bold. That's
Tino, he's somebody else that's obviously in camp with Eddie Reynoso. Eddie calls him my little crazy. Why is that? Is he as crazy as Eddie says?
He's crazier than you think. I will say that.
Give us an example of his craziness.
Well, I heard someone. I heard he once went to jail because he beat up like 4 or 5 guys.
Oh my gosh!
In a row, like
that's an active
in
fighter.
One day.
I know, right? That's a part of his training, probably.
Are they on his ledger?
This is a story I have to bring up to him tomorrow and be like, "Hey, can you tell us a story? Because it's a great story."
Yeah, that's definitely something that people would want to hear. That seems very, very interesting.
And come on, he's not the tallest guy, you know. I'd love to see
him. But he packs
him
a punch.
Yeah, but I'd love to see him beat up 4 or 5 guys like a movie or something.
Man. Well, guys, we appreciate your time, obviously, here in San Diego, California, after the Canelo and Dimitri Bivol kickoff press conference. Obviously, we gave our take. Mike, who wins that fight? I don't think I asked you.
Ooh. I think Martinez, maybe. I think he may be just fresher, like Tino said. I think Chocolatito is obviously slowing down. Father Time's undefeated. So I think Martinez may just sneak it late on.
Wow. What about you? I'm with Steve. I think Chocolatito is going to take it. I think the veteran instincts in him are going to take over.
All right. Loser has to buy a beer.
Okay.
I'm in. Yeah. We can work with that.
All right. Let's do it.
Good stuff. I only do Coors Light, fellas. So don't get cheap on me.
You mentioned Tecate earlier. You said bold. So I thought that was the go-to. But once again, guys, we appreciate it. Obviously, go ahead and plug your social media, everything you got, 3 Knockdown Rule.
Yeah, 3 Knockdown Rule is coming out late this week because Mario's making a lot of money. He's got a lot of gigs. also, snack.com, Canine's Corner, twice a week I come out with an article. And then I also am on Fearless with Jason Whitlock on the Blaze Network.
Follow me on Instagram, Constantino Garcia, and follow my YouTube channel, Little Giant Boxing. I'm going to give you guys some great, great content leading up to the Canelo versus Bivol fight, as well as the Canelo Triple G trilogy.
Sweet, sweet. And we are at the Last Round 12 all over social media, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at the Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.